The inside of the old hospital had been carefully whitewashed, lending an eerie glow to each of the surfaces. Most of the windows were boarded up, but even in the dim light, Maya's enhanced sight could pick out details: the sifted dusting of plaster along the bare hallway floors, the marks where construction lights had been put in, bits of wiring glued to the walls by clumps of paint, mice scrabbling in the darkened corners. A voice spoke from behind her. "I've searched the east wing. Nothing. What about you?" Maya turned. Jordan stood behind her, wearing dark jeans and a black sweater half-zipped over a green t-shirt. She shook her head. "Nothing in the west wing, either. Some pretty rickety staircases, nice architectural detailing, if that sort of thing interests you." He shook his head. "Let's get out of here, then. This place gives me the creeps." Maya agreed, relieved not to be the one who had to say it. She fell into step beside Jordan as they made their way down a set of stairs whose banister was so flaked with crumbling plaster that it resembled snow. She wasn't sure why exactly she'd agreed to patrol with him, but she couldn't deny that they made a decent team. Jordan was easy to be with. Despite what had happened between them just before Jace had disappeared, he was respectful, keeping his distance without making her feel awkward. The moonlight was bright on both of them as they came out of the hospital and into the open space in front of it. It was a great white marble building whose boarded-over windows looked like blank eyes. A crooked tree, shedding its last leaves, hunched before the front doors.
"Well, that was a waste of time," said Jordan.
Maya looked over at him. He was staring at the old naval hospital, which was how she preferred it. She liked to look at Jordan when he wasn't looking at her. That way she could watch the angle of his jawline, the way his dark hair curled against the back of his neck, the curve of his collarbone under the V of his t-shirt, without feeling like he expected anything from her for looking. He'd been a pretty hipster boy when she'd met him, all angles and eyelashes. But he was older looking now, with scarred knuckles and muscles that moved smoothly under his close-fitting green t-shirt. He still had the olive tone to his skin that echoed his Italian heritage, and the hazel eyes she remembered, though they had the gold-ringed pupils of lycanthropy now. The same pupils she saw when she looked in the mirror every morning. The pupils she had because of him. "Maya?" He was looking at her quizzically. "What do you think?"
"Oh," she blinked. I don't think there was much point in searching the hospital. I mean, to be honest, I can't see why they sent us down here at all. The Brooklyn Navy Yard? Why would Jace be here? It's not like he had a thing for boats."
Jordan's expression went from quizzical to something much darker. "When bodies wind up in the East River, a lot of times they wash up here, the Navy Yard."
"You think we're looking for a body?"
"I don't know." With a shrug, he turned and started walking. His boots rustled in the dry, choppy grass. "Maybe at this point I'm just searching because it feels wrong to give up." His pace was slow, unhurried. They walked shoulder to shoulder, nearly touching. Maya kept her eyes fixed on the Manhattan skyline across the river, a wash of brilliant white light reflecting in the water. As they neared the shallow Wallabout Bay, the arch of the Brooklyn Bridge came into view, and the lit-up rectangle of the South Street Seaport across the water. She could smell the polluted miasma of the water, the dirt and diesel of the Navy Yard, the scent of small animals moving in the grass.
"I don't think Jace is dead," she said finally. "I think he doesn't want to be found."
At that, Jordan did look at her.
"Are you saying we shouldn't be looking?"
"No," she hesitated. They had come out by the river, near a low wall. She trailed her hand along the top of it as they walked. There was a narrow strip of asphalt between them and the water. "When I ran away to New York, I didn't want to be found. But I would have liked the idea that someone was looking for me as hard as everyone's looking for Jace Lightwood."
"Did you like Jace?" Jordan's voice was neutral.
"Like him? Well, not like that."
Jordan laughed. "I didn't mean like that. Although he seems to be generally considered stunningly attractive.
Are you gonna pull that straight guy thing where you pretend that you can't tell whether other guys are attractive or not?
Jace, the hairy guy at the deli on 9th, they all look the same to you? Well, the hairy guy has that mole, so I think Jace comes out slightly ahead. If you like that whole chiseled blonde Abercrombie and Fitch wishes they could afford me thing. He looked at her through his eyelashes. I always liked dark-haired boys, she said in a low voice. He looked at the river. Like Simon? Well, yeah. Maya hadn't thought about Simon that way in a while. I guess so. And you like musicians. He reached up and pulled a leaf off a low-hanging branch overhead. I mean, I'm a singer, and Bat was a DJ, and Simon... I like music. Maya pushed her hair back from her face. What else do you like? Jordan tore at the leaf in his fingers. He paused and hoisted himself up to sit on the low wall, swinging around to face her. I mean, is there anything you like so much you think you might want to do it for, like, a living? She looked at him in surprise. What do you mean? Do you remember when I got these? He unzipped his sweater and shrugged it off. The shirt he wore underneath was short-sleeved. Wrapped around each of his biceps were the Sanskrit words of the Shanti mantras. She remembered them well. Their friend, Valerie, had inked them, after hours, for free in her tattoo shop in Red Bank. Maya took a step toward him. With him sitting and her standing, they were nearly eye to eye. She reached out and hesitantly ran her fingers around the letters inked on his left arm. His eyes fluttered shut at her touch. Lead us from the unreal to the real, she read aloud. Lead us from darkness to light. Lead us from death to immortality. His skin felt smooth under her fingertips. From the Upanishads. They were your idea. You were the one who was always reading. You were the one who knew everything. He opened his eyes and looked at her. His eyes were shades lighter than the water behind him. Maya, whatever you want to do, I'll help you. I've saved up a lot of my salary from the preacher. I could give it to you. It could cover your tuition to Stanford. Well, most of it. If you still wanted to go. I don't know, she said, her mind whirling. When I joined the pack, I thought you couldn't be a werewolf and anything else. I thought it was just about living in the pack, not really having an identity. I felt safer that way. But Luke, he has a life. He owns a bookstore. And you're in the Praetor. I guess you can be more than one thing. You always have been. His voice was low, throaty. You know, what you said earlier, that when you ran away, you would have liked to think someone was looking for you? He took a deep breath. I was looking for you. I never stopped. She met his hazel eyes. He didn't move, but his hands, gripping his knees, were white-knuckled. Maya leaned forward, close enough to see the faint stubble along his jaw, to smell the scent of him, wolf smell and toothpaste, and boy. She placed her hands over his. Well, she said, you found me. Their faces were only inches away from each other. She felt his breath against her lips before he kissed her, and she leaned into it, her eyes closing. His mouth was as soft as she remembered, his lips brushing hers gently, sending shivers all through her. She raised her arms to wind them around his neck, to slide her fingers under his curling dark hair, to lightly touch the bare skin of the nape of his neck, the edge of the worn collar of his shirt. He pulled her closer. He was shaking. She felt the heat of his strong body against hers as his hands slid down her back. Maya, he whispered. He started to lift the hem of her sweater, his fingers gripping the small of her back. His lips moved against hers. I love you. I never stopped loving you. You're mine. You'll always be mine. Her heart hammering, she jerked away from him, pulling her sweater down. Jordan, stop. He looked at her, his expression dazed and worried. I'm sorry. Was that not any good? I haven't kissed anyone but you, not since... He trailed off. She shook her head. No, It's just, I can't. All right, he said. He looked very vulnerable, sitting there, dismay written all over his face. We don't have to do anything. She groped for words. It's just too much. It was only a kiss. You said you loved me. Her voice shook. You offered to give me your savings. I can't take that from you. Which, he said, hurt sparking in his voice. My money or the love part? Either. I just can't, okay? Not with you. Not right now. She started to back away. He was staring after her, his lips parted. Don't follow me, please, she said, and turned to hurry back the way they had come. Chapter 5 Valentine's Son. She was dreaming of icy landscapes again. Bitter tundra that stretched in all directions, ice floes drifting out on the black waters of the Arctic Sea, snow-capped mountains, and cities carved out of ice whose towers sparkled like the demon towers of Alicante. In front of the frozen city was a frozen lake. Clary was skidding down a steep slope, trying to reach the lake, but she was not sure why. Two dark figures stood in the center of the frozen water. As she neared the lake, skidding on the surface of the slope, her hands burning from contact with the ice and snow filling her shoes, she saw that one was a boy with black wings that spread out from his back like a crow's. His hair was as white as the ice all around them. Sebastian. And beside Sebastian was Jace, his gold hair the only color in the frozen landscape that was not black or white. As Jace turned away from Sebastian and began to walk toward Clary, wings burst from his back, white gold and shimmering. Clary slid the last few feet to the frozen surface of the lake and collapsed to her knees, exhausted. Her hands were blue and bleeding, her lips cracked, her lungs seared with each icy breath. Jace, she whispered. And he was there, lifting her to her feet, his wings wrapping around her. And she was warm again, her body thawing from her heart down through her veins, bringing her hands and feet to life with half-painful, half-pleasurable tingles. Clary, he said, stroking her hair tenderly, can you promise me that you won't scream? Clary's eyes opened. For a moment, she was so disoriented that the world seemed to swing around her like the view from a moving carousel. She was in her bedroom at Luke's, the familiar futon beneath her, the wardrobe with its cracked mirror, the strip of windows that looked out onto the East River, the radiator spitting and hissing. Dim light spilled through the windows, and a faint red glow came from the smoke alarm over the closet. Clary was lying on her side, under a heap of blankets, and her back was deliciously warm. An arm was draped along her side. For a moment, in the half-conscious, dizzy space between waking and sleeping, she wondered if Simon had crawled in the window while she slept and lain down beside her, the way they used to sleep in the same bed together when they were children. But Simon had no body heat. Her heart skittered in her chest. Now entirely awake, she twisted around under the covers. Beside her was Jace, lying on his side, looking down at her, his head propped on his hand. Dim moonlight made a halo out of his hair, and his eyes glittered gold like a cat's. He was fully dressed, still wearing the short-sleeved white t-shirt she had seen him in earlier that day, and his bare arms were twined with runes like climbing vines. She sucked in a startled breath. Jace, her Jace, had never looked at her like that. He had looked at her with desire, but not with this lazy, predatory, consuming look that made her heart pulse unevenly in her chest. She opened her mouth, to say his name, or to scream, she wasn't sure, and she never got the chance to find out. Jace moved so fast she didn't even see it. One moment he was lying beside her, and the next he was on top of her, one hand clamped down over her mouth, His legs straddled her hips. She could feel his lean, muscled body pressed against hers. "I'm not going to hurt you," he said. "I'd never hurt you. But I don't want you screaming. I need to talk to you." She glared at him. To her surprise, he laughed. His familiar laugh hushed to a whisper. "I can read your expression, Clary Frey. The minute I take my hand off your mouth, you're going to yell, or use your training and break my wrists. Come on, promise me you won't. Swear on the angel." This time she rolled her eyes. "Okay, you're right," he said. "You can't exactly swear with my hand over your mouth. I'm going to take it off. And if you yell..." He tilted his head to the side. Pale gold hair fell across his eyes. "I'll disappear." He took his hand away. She lay still, breathing hard, the pressure of his body on hers. She knew he was faster than her, that there was no move she could make that he wouldn't outpace. But for the moment, he seemed to be treating their interaction as a game, something playful. He bent closer to her, and she realized her tank top had pulled up, and she could feel the muscles of his flat, hard stomach against her bare skin. Her face flushed. Despite the heat in her face, it felt as if cold needles of ice were running up and down her veins. "What are you doing here?" He drew back slightly, looking disappointed. "That isn't really an answer to my question, you know. I was expecting more of a hallelujah chorus. I mean, it's not every day your boyfriend comes back from the dead." "I already knew you weren't dead," she spoke through numb lips. "I saw you in the library with Colonel Mustard?" "Sebastian." He let his breath out in a low chuckle. "I knew you were there, too. I could feel it." She felt her body tighten. "You let me think you were gone," she said. "Before that, I thought you... I really thought there was a chance you were..." She broke off. She couldn't say it. "Dead." "It's unforgivable. If I'd done that to you..." "Clary..." He leaned down over her again. His hands were warm on her wrists, his breath soft in her ear. She could feel everywhere that their bare skin touched. It was horribly distracting. "I had to do it. It was too dangerous. If I told you, you would have had to choose between telling the council I was still alive and letting them hunt me, and keeping a secret that would make you an accomplice in their eyes. Then, when you saw me in the library, I had to wait. I needed to know if you still loved me, if you would go to the council or not about what you'd seen. You didn't. I had to know you cared more about me than the law. You do, don't you?" "I don't know," she whispered. "I don't know. Who are you?" "I'm still Jace," he said. "I still love you." Hot tears welled up in her eyes. She blinked, and they spilled down her face. Gently, he ducked his head and kissed her cheeks, and then her mouth. She tasted her own tears, salty on his lips, and he opened her mouth with his, carefully, gently. The familiar taste and feel of him washed over her, and she leaned into him for a split second, her doubts subsumed in her body's blind, unreasoning recognition of the need to keep him close, to keep him there. Just as the door of her bedroom opened, Jace let go of her. Clary instantly jerked away from him, scrambling to pull down her tank top. Jace stretched himself into a sitting position with unhurried, lazy grace and grinned up at the person standing in the doorway. "Well, well," Jace said. "You may have the worst timing since Napoleon decided the dead of winter was the right moment to invade Russia." It was Sebastian. Close up, Clary could more clearly see the differences in him since she had known him in Idris. His hair was paper white, his eyes black tunnels fringed by lashes as long as spiders' legs. He wore a white shirt, the sleeves pulled up, and she could see a red scar ringing his right wrist, like a ridged bracelet. There was a scar across the palm of his hand, too, looking new and harsh. "That's my sister you're defiling there, you know," he said, moving his black gaze to Jace. There was amusement in his expression, Sorry. Jace didn't sound sorry. He was leaning back against the blankets, cat-like. We got carried away. Clary sucked in a breath. It sounded harsh in her own ears. Get out, she said to Sebastian. He leaned against the doorframe, elbow and hip, and she was struck by the similarity in movement between him and Jace. They didn't look alike, but they moved alike. As if they'd been trained to move by the same person. Now, he said, is that any way to talk to your big brother? Magnus should have left you a coat rack, Clary spat. Oh, you remember that, do you? I thought we had a pretty good time that day. He smirked a little, and Clary, with a sick drop in her stomach, remembered how he had taken her to the burned remains of her mother's house, how he had kissed her among the rubble, knowing all along who they really were to each other and delighting in the fact that she didn't. She glanced sideways at Jace. He knew perfectly well that Sebastian had kissed her. Sebastian had taunted him with it, and Jace had nearly killed him. But he didn't look angry now. He looked amused, and mildly annoyed to have been interrupted. We should do it again, Sebastian said, examining his nails. Have some family time. I don't care what you think. You're not my brother, Clary said. You're a murderer. I really don't see how those things cancel each other out, said Sebastian. It's not like they did in the case of dear old Dad. His gaze drifted lazily back to Jace. Normally, I'd hate to get in the way of a friend's love life, but I really don't care for standing out here in the hallway indefinitely, especially since I can't turn on any lights. It's boring. Jace sat up, tugging his shirt down. Give us 5 minutes. Sebastian sighed an exaggerated sigh and swung the door shut. Clary stared at Jace. What the language, Frey? Jace's eyes danced. Relax. Clary jabbed her hand toward the door. You heard what he said about that day he kissed me. He knew I was his sister. Jace! Something flashed in his eyes, darkening their gold. But when he spoke again, it was as if her words had hit a Teflon surface and bounced off, making no impression. She drew back from him. Jace, aren't you listening to anything I'm saying? Look, I understand if you're uncomfortable with your brother waiting outside in the hallway. I wasn't planning on kissing you. He grinned in a way that at another time she would have found adorable. It just seemed like a good idea at the time. Clary scrambled out of bed, staring down at him. She reached for the robe that hung on the post of her bed and wrapped it around herself. Jace watched, making no move to stop her, though his eyes shone in the dark. I don't even understand. First you disappear, and now you come back with him, acting like I'm not even supposed to notice or care or remember. I told you, he said. I had to be sure of you. I didn't want to put you in the position of knowing where I was while the Clave was still investigating you. I thought it would be hard for you. Hard for me? She was almost breathless with rage. Tests are hard. Obstacle courses are hard. You disappearing like that practically killed me, Jace. And what do you think you've done to Alec, Isabel, Maris? Do you know what it's been like? Can you imagine? Not knowing, the searching. That odd look passed over his face again, as if he were hearing her but not hearing her at the same time. Oh, yes. I was going to ask. He smiled like an angel. Is everyone looking for me? Is everyone... She shook her head, pulling the robe closer. Suddenly, she wanted to be covered up in front of him, in front of all that familiarity and beauty and that lovely predatory smile that said he was willing to do whatever with her. To her, no matter who was waiting in the hall. I was hoping they'd put up flyers like they do for lost cats, he said. Missing, one stunningly attractive teenage boy. Answers to Jace, or hot stuff. You did not just say that. You don't like hot stuff? You think sweet cheeks might be better? Love crumpet? Really, that last one's stretching it a bit. Though, technically, my family is British. Shut up. She said savagely. And get out. He looked taken aback, and she remembered how surprised he'd been outside the manor when she'd pushed him away.
All right, fine. I'll be serious.
Clarissa, I'm here because I want you to come with me.
Come where with you?
Come with me, he said, and then hesitated. And Sebastian. And I'll explain everything. For a moment, she was frozen. Her eyes locked on his. Silvery moonlight outlined the curves of his mouth, the shape of his cheekbones, the shadow of his lashes, the arch of his throat. The last time I came with you somewhere, I wound up knocked unconscious and dragged into the middle of a black magic ceremony.
That wasn't me. That was Lilith.
The Jace Lightwood I know wouldn't be in the same room with Jonathan Morgenstern without killing him.
I think you'll find that would be self-defeating, Jace said lightly, shoving his feet into his boots.
We are bound, he and I. Cut him and I bleed.
Bound?
What do you mean, bound?
He tossed his light hair back, ignoring her question.
This is bigger than you understand, Clary. He has a plan. He's willing to work, to sacrifice. If you'd give me a chance to explain.
He killed Max, Jace, she said.
Your little brother.
He flinched, and for a moment of wild hope she thought she'd broken through to him, but his expression smoothed over like a wrinkled sheet pulled tight.
It was an accident. Besides, Sebastian's just as much my brother.
No, Clary shook her head. He's not your brother. He's mine. God knows I wish it weren't true. He should never have been born.
How can you say that? Jace demanded. He swung his legs out of the bed. Have you ever considered that maybe things aren't so black and white as you think?
He bent over to grab his weapons belt and buckle it on.
There was a war, Clary, and people got hurt. But things were different then. Now I know Sebastian would never harm anyone I loved intentionally. He's serving a greater cause. Sometimes there's collateral damage.
Did you just call your own brother collateral damage?
Her voice rose in an incredulous half-shout. She felt as if she could barely breathe.
Clary, you're not listening. This is important.
Like what Valentine thought he was doing was important?
Valentine was wrong, he said. He was right about the Clave was corrupt, but wrong about how to go about fixing things. But Sebastian is right. If you'd just hear us out.
Us, she said.
God.
Jace. He was staring at her from the bed. And even as she felt her heart breaking, her mind was racing, trying to remember where she had left her Steely, wondering if she could get to the X-Acto knife in the drawer of her nightstand, wondering if she could bring herself to use it if she did.
Clary? Jace tilted his head to the side, studying her face.
You do... You still love me, don't you?
I love Jace Lightwood, she said. I don't know who you are. His face changed. But before he could speak, a scream shattered the silence. A scream and the sound of breaking glass.
Clary knew the voice instantly. It was her mother.
Without another glance at Jace, she yanked the bedroom door open and bolted down the hallway into the living room. The living room in Luke's house was large, divided from the kitchen by a long counter. Jocelyn, in yoga pants and a frayed t-shirt, her hair pulled back in a messy bun, stood by the counter. She had clearly come into the kitchen for something to drink. A glass lay shattered at her feet, the water soaking into the gray carpeting. All the color had drained from her face, leaving her as pale as bleached sand. She was staring across the room, and even before Clary turned her head, she knew what her mother was looking at. Her son. Sebastian was leaning against the living room wall, near the door, with no expression on his angular face. He lowered his eyelids and looked at Jocelyn through his lashes. Something about his posture, the look of him, could have stepped out of Hodge's photograph of Valentine at 17 years old.
Jonathan, Jocelyn whispered.
Clary stood frozen. Even as Jace burst out of the hallway, took in the scene in front of him in one moment, and came to a halt. His left hand was at his weapons belt. His slim fingers were inches from the hilt of one of his daggers, but Clary knew it would take him less than seconds to free it.
I go by Sebastian now, said Clary's brother. I concluded that I wasn't interested in keeping the name you and my father gave me. Both of you betrayed me, and I would prefer as little association with you as possible. Water spread out from the pool of broken glass at Jocelyn's feet in a dark ring. She took a step forward, her eyes searching, running up and down Sebastian's face. I thought you were dead, she whispered. Dead. I saw your bones turn to ashes. Sebastian looked at her, his black eyes quiet and narrow. If you were a real mother, he said, a good mother, you would have known I was alive. There was a man once who said that mothers carry the key of our souls with them all our lives. But you threw mine away. Jocelyn made a sound in the back of her throat. She was leaning against the counter for support. Clary wanted to run to her, but her feet felt frozen to the ground. Whatever was happening between her brother and her mother, it was something that had nothing to do with her. Don't tell me you aren't even a little glad to see me, mother, Sebastian said, and though his words were pleading, his voice was flat. Aren't I everything you could want in a son? He spread his arms wide. Strong, handsome, looks just like dear old dad. Jocelyn shook her head, her face gray. What do you want, Jonathan? I want what everyone wants, said Sebastian. I want what's owed to me. In this case, the Morgenstern legacy. The Morgenstern legacy is blood and devastation, said Jocelyn. We are not Morgensterns here. Not me, and not my daughter. She straightened up. Her hand was still gripping the counter. But Clary could see some of the old fire returning to her mother's expression. If you go now, Jonathan, I won't tell the Clave you were ever here. Her eyes flicked to Jace. Or you. If they knew you were cooperating, they would kill you both. Clary moved to stand in front of Jace, reflexively. He looked past her, over her shoulder, at her mother. You care if I die? Jace said. I care about what it would do to my daughter, said Jocelyn. And the law is hard, too hard. What has happened to you? Maybe it can be undone. Her eyes moved back to Sebastian. But for you, my Jonathan, it's much too late. The hand that had been gripping the counter swept forward, holding Luke's long-handled kindle blade. Tears shone on Jocelyn's face, but her grip on the knife was steady. I look just like him, don't I? Sebastian said, not moving. He seemed barely to notice the knife. Valentine, that's why you're looking at me like that. Jocelyn shook her head. You look like you always did. From the moment I first saw you, you look like a demon thing. Her voice was achingly sad. I'm so sorry. Sorry for what? For not killing you when you were born, she said, and came out from behind the counter, spinning the kinjal in her hand. Clary tensed, but Sebastian didn't move. His dark eyes followed his mother as she came toward him. Is that what you want? He said. For me to die. He opened his arms, as if he meant to embrace Jocelyn, and took a step forward. Go ahead. Commit filicide. I won't stop you. Sebastian, said Jace. Clary shot him an incredulous look. Did he actually sound concerned? Jocelyn moved another step forward. The knife was a blur in her hand. When it came to a stop, the tip was pointed directly at Sebastian's heart. Still, he didn't move. Do it, he said softly. He cocked his head to the side. Or can you bring yourself to? You could have killed me when I was born, but you didn't. His voice lowered. Maybe you know that there is no such thing as conditional love for a child. Maybe if you loved me enough, you could save me. For a moment, they stared at each other, mother and son. Ice-green eyes meeting coal-black ones. There were sharp lines at the corners of Jocelyn's mouth that Clary could have sworn hadn't been there 2 weeks ago. You're pretending, she said, her voice shaking. You don't feel anything, Jonathan. Your father taught you to feign human emotion the way one might teach a parrot to repeat words. It doesn't understand what it's saying, and neither do you. I wish, oh God, I wish that you did, but...
Jocelyn brought the blade up in a swift, clean, cutting arc, a perfectly placed blow. It should have driven up under Sebastian's ribs and into his heart. It would have, if he had not moved even faster than Jace. He spun away and back, and the tip of the blade cut only a shallow slash along his chest. Beside Clary, Jace sucked in his breath. She whirled to look at him. There was a spreading red stain across the front of his shirt. He touched his hand to it. His fingertips came away bloody. We are bound. Cut him, and I bleed. Without another thought, Clary darted across the room, throwing herself between Jocelyn and Sebastian. Mom, she gasped. Stop. Jocelyn was still holding the knife, her eyes on Sebastian. Clary, get out of the way. Sebastian began to laugh. Sweet, isn't it? He said. A little sister defending her big brother. I'm not defending you. Clary kept her eyes fixed on her mother's face. Whatever happens to Jonathan, happens to Jace. Do you understand, Mom? If you kill him, Jace dies. He's already bleeding. Mom, please. Jocelyn was still gripping the knife, but her expression was uncertain. Clary. Gracious, how awkward, Sebastian observed. I'll be interested to see how you resolve this. After all, I've got no reason to leave. Yes, actually, came a voice from the hallway. You do. It was Luke, barefoot and in jeans and an old sweater. He looked tousled, and oddly younger without his glasses. He also had a sawed-off shotgun balanced at his shoulder, the barrel trained directly on Sebastian. This is a Winchester 12-gauge pump-action shotgun. The pack uses it to put down wolves who've gone rogue, he said. Even if I don't kill you, I can blow your leg off, Valentine's son. It was as if everyone in the room took a quick gasp of breath all at once. Everyone except Luke. And Sebastian, who, a grin splitting his face in half, turned and walked toward Luke, as if oblivious of the gun. Valentine's son, he said. Is that really how you think of me? Under other circumstances, you could have been my godfather. Under other circumstances, said Luke, sliding his fingers onto the trigger, you could have been human. Sebastian stopped in his tracks. The same could be said of you, werewolf. The world seemed to have slowed down. Luke sighted along the barrel of the rifle. Sebastian stood smiling. Luke, Clary said. It was like one of those dreams, a nightmare where she wanted to scream, but all that would scrape past her throat was a whisper. Luke, don't do it. Her stepfather's finger tightened on the trigger, and then Jace exploded into movement, launching himself from beside Clary, flipping over the sofa and slamming into Luke just as a shotgun went off. The shot flew wide, one of the windows shattered outward as the bullet struck it. Luke, knocked off balance, staggered back. Jace yanked the gun from his hands and threw it. It hurtled through the broken window, and Jace turned back toward the older man. Luke, he began. Luke hit him. Even knowing everything she knew, the shock of it, seeing Luke, who had stood up for Jace countless times to her mother, to Maris, to the Clave, Luke, who was basically gentle and kind, seeing him actually strike Jace across the face was as if he had hit Clary instead. Jace, totally unprepared, was thrown backward into the wall. And Sebastian, who had so far shown no real emotion beyond mockery and disgust, snarled. Snarled and drew from his belt a long, thin dagger. Luke's eyes widened, and he began to twist away, but Sebastian was faster than him, faster than anyone else Clary had ever seen, faster than Jace. He drove the dagger into Luke's chest, twisting it hard before jerking it back out, red to the hilt. Luke fell back against the wall, then slid down it, leaving a smear of blood behind as Clary stared in horror. Jocelyn screamed. The sound was worse than the sound of the bullet shattering the window, though Clary heard it as if it came from a distance away, or underwater. She was staring at Luke, who had collapsed to the floor, the carpet around him rapidly turning red. Sebastian raised the dagger again, and Clary flung herself at him, slamming as hard as she could into his shoulder, trying to knock him off balance. She barely moved him, but he did drop the dagger. He turned on her. He was bleeding from a split lip. Clary didn't know why,
Not until Jay swung into her field of vision and she saw the blood on his mouth where Luke had hit him. Enough! Jace grabbed Sebastian by the back of the jacket. He was pale, not looking at Luke, or at Clary either. Stop it. This isn't why we came here. Let me go. No. Jace reached around Sebastian and grabbed his hand. His eyes met Clary's, his lips shaped words. There was a flash of silver, the ring on Sebastian's finger. And then both of them were gone, winking out of existence between one breath and another. Just as they vanished, a streak of something metallic shot through the air where they had been standing and buried itself in the wall. Luke's Kindle. Clary turned to look at her mother, who had thrown the knife. But Jocelyn wasn't looking at Clary. She was darting to Luke's side, dropping to her knees on the bloody carpet and pulling him up onto her lap. His eyes were closed. Blood trickled from the corners of his mouth. Sebastian's silver dagger, smeared with more blood, lay a few feet away. Mom, Clary whispered. Is he? The dagger was silver. Jocelyn's voice shook. He won't heal fast like he should, not without special treatment. She touched Luke's face with her fingertips. His chest was rising and falling, Clary saw with relief, if shallowly. She could taste tears burning in the back of her throat, and for a moment was amazed at her mother's calm. But then this was the woman who had once stood in the ashes of her home, surrounded by the blackened bodies of her family, including her parents and son, and had gone on from that. Get some towels from the bathroom, her mother said. We have to stop the bleeding. Clary staggered to her feet and went almost blindly into Luke's small tiled bathroom. There was a gray towel hanging from the back of the door. She yanked it down, went back into the living room. Jocelyn was holding Luke in her lap with one hand. The other hand held a cell phone. She dropped it and reached for the towel as Clary came in. Folding it in half, she lay it over the wound in Luke's chest and pressed down. Clary watched as the edges of the gray towel began to turn scarlet with blood. Luke, Clary whispered. He didn't move. His face was an awful gray color. I just called his pack, Jocelyn said. She didn't look at her daughter. Clary realized Jocelyn had not asked her a single question about Jason Sebastian, or why she and Jace had emerged from her bedroom, or what they'd been doing there. She was entirely focused on Luke. They have some members patrolling the area. As soon as they get here, we have to leave. Jace will come back for you. You don't know that, Clary began, whispering past her dry throat. I do, said Jocelyn. Valentine came back for me after 15 years. That's what the Morganstern men are like. They don't ever give up. He'll come for you again. Jace isn't Valentine. But the words died on Clary's lips. She wanted to drop to her knees and take Luke's hand, hold it tightly, tell him she loved him. But she remembered Jace's hands on her in the bedroom and didn't. This was her fault. She didn't deserve to get to comfort Luke or herself. She deserved the pain. The guilt. The scrape of footsteps sounded on the porch, the low murmur of voices. Jocelyn's head jerked up, the pack. Clary, go and get your things, she said. Take what you think you'll need, but no more than you can carry. We're not coming back to this house. Chapter 6. No weapon in this world. Little flakes of early snow had begun to fall from the steel-gray sky like feathers as Clary and her mother hurried along Greenpoint Avenue, their heads bent against the chill wind coming off the East River. Jocelyn had not spoken a word since they had left Luke at the disused police station that served as the pack headquarters. The whole thing had been a blur. The pack carrying their leader in, the healing kit, Clary and her mother struggling to get a glimpse of Luke as the wolves seemed to close ranks against them. She knew why they couldn't take him to a mundane hospital, but it had been hard, beyond hard, to leave him there in the whitewashed room that served as their infirmary. It wasn't that the wolves didn't like Jocelyn or Clary. It was that Luke's fiancé and her daughter weren't part of the pack. They never would be. Clary had looked around for Maya, for an ally, but she hadn't been there. Eventually, Jocelyn had sent Clary out to wait in the corridor since the room had been too crowded, and Clary had slumped on the floor, cradling her knapsack on her lap. It had been 2 in the morning, and she had never felt so alone. If Luke died... She could barely remember a life without him. Because of him and her mother, she knew what it was like to be loved unconditionally. Luke swinging her up to perch in the fork of an apple tree on his farm upstate was one of her earliest memories. In the infirmary, he had been taking rattling breaths while his third in command, Bat, had unpacked the healing kit. People were supposed to take rattling breaths when they died, she remembered. She couldn't remember the last thing she'd said to Luke. Weren't you supposed to remember the last thing you said to someone before they died? When Jocelyn had come out of the infirmary at last, looking exhausted, she'd held out a hand to Clary and had helped her up off the floor. Is he? Clary had begun. He's stabilized, Jocelyn had said. She looked up and down the hallway. We should go. Go where? Clary had been bewildered. I thought we'd stay here, with Luke. I don't want to leave him. Neither do I. Jocelyn had been firm. Clary had thought of the woman who'd turned her back on Idris, on everything she'd ever known, and had walked away from it to start a new life alone. But we can't leave Jace and Jonathan here either. It's not safe for the pack, or Luke. And this is the first place Jace will look for you. Then where? Clary had started. But she realized, even before she'd finished her own sentence, and had shut her mouth. Where did they ever go when they needed help these days? Now there was a sugary dusting of white along the cracked pavement of the avenue. Jocelyn had put on a long coat before they'd left the house, but beneath it she still wore the clothes that were stained with Luke's blood. Her mouth was set, her gaze unwavering on the road before her. Clary wondered if this was how her mother had looked walking out of Idris, her boots clogged with ashes, the mortal cup hidden in her coat. Clary shook her head to clear it. She was being fanciful, imagining things she hadn't been present to see, her mind skittering away, perhaps from the awfulness of what she'd just had seen. Unbidden, the image of Sebastian driving the knife into Luke came into her head, and the sound of Jace's familiar and beloved voice saying, "Collateral damage." For as is often the happenstance with that which is precious and lost, when you find him again, he may well not be quite as you left him. Jocelyn shivered and flipped her hood up to cover her hair. White flakes of snow had already begun to mix with the bright red strands. She was still silent, and the street lined with Polish and Russian restaurants in between barbershops and beauty parlors was deserted in the white and yellow light. A memory flashed before the backs of Clary's eyelids, a real one this time, not a wisp of imagination. Her mother was hurrying her down a night-black street between piles of heaped and dirty snow, a lowering sky, gray and leaden. She had seen this image before, the first time the Silent Brothers had dug into her mind. She realized what it was now. Her memory of a time her mother had taken her to Magnus's to have her memory altered. It must have been in the dead of winter. But she recognized Greenpoint Avenue in the memory. The red brick warehouse Magnus lived in rose above them. Jocelyn pushed open the glass doors to the entryway, and they crowded inside, Clary trying to breathe through her mouth as her mother pushed the buzzer for Magnus 1, 2, and 3 times. At last the door opened and they hurried up the stairs. The door to Magnus's apartment was open, and the warlock was leaning against the architrave, waiting for them. He was wearing canary-yellow pajamas, and on his feet were green slippers with alien faces, complete with sprungy antennae. His hair was a tangled, curly, spiky mass of black, and his gold-green eyes blinked tiredly at them. "St. Magnus is home for wayward shadow hunters," he said in a deep voice. "Welcome." He threw an arm wide. "Spare bedrooms are that way. Wipe your boots on the mat." He stepped back into the apartment, letting them pass through in front of him before shutting the door. Today the place was done up in a sort of faux Victorian decor, with high-backed sofas and large gilt mirrors everywhere. The pillars were strung with lights in the shape of flowers. There were three spare rooms down a short corridor off the main living room. At random, Clary chose one on the right. It was painted orange, like her old bedroom in Park Slope. It had a sofa bed and a small window that looked out onto the darkened windows of a closed diner. Chairman Meow was curled up on the bed, nose tucked under his tail. She sat down beside him and petted his ears, feeling the purring that was vibrating through his small furry body. As she stroked him, she caught sight of the sleeve of her sweater. It was stained dark and crusted with blood. Luke's blood. She stood up and yanked the sweater off violently. From her backpack she took a clean pair of jeans and a black V-neck thermal shirt and changed into them. She glanced at herself briefly in the window, which showed her a pale reflection, her hair hanging limply, damp with snow, her freckles standing out like paint splotches. Not that it mattered what she looked like. She thought of Jace kissing her. It felt like days ago instead of hours, and her stomach hurt as if she'd swallowed tiny knives. She held on to the edge of the bed for a long moment until the pain subsided. Then she took a deep breath and went back out into the living room. Her mother was seated on one of the gilt-backed chairs, her long artist's fingers wrapped around a mug of hot water with lemon. Magnus was slumped on a hot pink sofa, his green slippers up on the coffee table. "The pack stabilized him," Jocelyn was saying in an exhausted voice. "They don't know for how long, though. They thought there might have been silver powder on the blade, but it appears to be something else. The tip of the knife..." She glanced up, saw Clary, and fell silent. "It's okay, Mom. I'm old enough now to hear what's wrong with Luke." "Well, they don't know exactly what it is," Jocelyn said softly. "The tip of the blade Sebastian used broke off against one of his ribs and lodged in the bone. But they can't retrieve it. It moves."
"It moves?"
Magnus looked puzzled.
"When they tried to dig it out, it burrowed into the bone and nearly snapped it," Jocelyn said. "He's a werewolf. He heals fast. But it's in there gashing up his internal organs, keeping the wound from closing."
"Demon metal," said Magnus, "not silver." Jocelyn leaned forward.
"Do you think you can help him? Whatever it costs, I'll pay."
Magnus stood up. His alien slippers and rumpled bedhead seemed extremely incongruous given the gravity of the situation.
"I don't know."
"But you healed Alex," said Clary, "when the greater demon wounded him." Magnus had begun to pace. "I knew what was wrong with him. I don't know what kind of demon metal this is. I could experiment, try different healing spells, but it won't be the fastest way to help him."
"What's the fastest way?" Jocelyn said.
"The Praetor," said Magnus. "The Wolfguard. I know the man who founded it. Wolsey Scott. Because of certain incidents, he was fascinated with minutiae about the way demon metal and demon drugs act on lycanthropes, the same way the Silent Brothers keep records of the way Nephilim can be healed. Over the years, the Praetor have become very closed off and secretive, unfortunately. But a member of the Praetor could access their information."
"Luke's not a member," Jocelyn said, "and their roster is secret."
"But Jordan," said Clary. "Jordan's a member. He can find out. I'll call him."
"I'll call him," said Magnus. "I can't get into Praetor headquarters, but I can pass on a message that ought to hold some extra weight. I'll be back."
He padded off to the kitchen, the antennae on his slippers waving gently like seaweed in a current. Clary turned back to her mother, who was staring down at her mug of hot water. It was one of her favorite restoratives, though Clary could never figure out why anyone would want to drink warm, sour water. The snow had soaked her mother's hair, and now that it was drying, it was beginning to curl, like Clary's did in humid weather.
"Mom," Clary said, and her mother looked up. "That knife you threw, back at Luke's, was it at Jace?"
"It was at Jonathan. She would never call him Sebastian," Clary knew.
"It's just..." Clary took a deep breath.
"It's almost the same thing. You saw. When you stabbed Sebastian, Jace started to bleed. It's like they're mirrored in some way. Cut Sebastian, Jace bleeds. Kill him, and Jace dies."
"Clary," Her mother rubbed her tired eyes. Can we not discuss this now?
But you said you think he'll come back for me. Jace, I mean. I need to know that you won't hurt him.
Well, you can't know that, because I won't promise it, Clary. I can't. Her mother looked at her with unflinching eyes. I saw the two of you come out of your bedroom.
Clary flushed.
I don't want to.
To what? Talk about it? Well, too bad. You brought it up.
You're lucky I'm not in the Clave anymore, you know.
How long have you known where Jace was?
I don't know where he is. Tonight is the first time I've talked to him since he disappeared. I saw him in the Institute with Jonathan yesterday. I told Alec and Isabel and Simon, but I couldn't tell anyone else. If the Clave got hold of him, I can't let that happen.
Jocelyn raised her green eyes.
And why not?
Because he's Jace. Because I love him.
He's not Jace. That's just it, Clary. He's not who he was. Can't you see that?
Of course I can see it. I'm not stupid. But I have faith. I saw him possessed before, and I saw him break free of it. I think Jace is still inside there somewhere. I think there's a way to save him.
What if there isn't?
Prove it.
You can't prove a negative, Clarissa.
I understand that you love him. You always have loved him. Too much.
You think I didn't love your father? You think I didn't give him every chance?
And look what came of that. Jonathan. If I hadn't stayed with your father, he wouldn't exist.
Neither would I, said Clary.
In case you forgot, I came after my brother, not before.
She looked at her mother, hard.
Are you saying it would have been worth it never to have had me? If you could get rid of Jonathan?
No, I...
There was the grating sound of keys in the lock, and the apartment door swung open. It was Alec. He wore a long leather duster open over a blue sweater, and there were white flakes of snow in his black hair. His cheeks were candy apple red from the cold, but his face was otherwise pale.
"Where's Magnus?" he said.
As he looked toward the kitchen, Clary saw a bruise on his jaw, below his ear, about the size of a thumbprint.
"Alec!"
Magnus came skidding into the living room and blew a kiss to his boyfriend across the room. Having discarded his slippers, he was barefoot now. His cat's eyes shone as he looked at Alec.
Clary knew that look. That was herself looking at Jace.
Alec didn't return the gaze, though. He was shucking off his coat and hanging it on a hook on the wall. He was visibly upset. His hands were trembling, his broad shoulders tightly set.
"You got my text?" Magnus asked.
"Yeah, I was only a few blocks away anyway." Alec looked at Clary, and then at her mother, anxiety and uncertainty warring in his expression. Though Alec had been invited to Jocelyn's reception party and had met her several times besides that, they did not by any measure know each other well.
"It's true, what Magnus said? You saw Jace again?"
"And Sebastian," said Clary.
"But Jace," Alec said. How did he seem?"
Clary knew exactly what he was asking. For once, she and Alec understood each other better than anyone else in the room.
"He's not playing a trick on Sebastian," she replied softly. "He really has changed. He isn't like himself at all."
"How?" Alec demanded, with an odd blend of anger and vulnerability. "How is he different?" There was a hole in the knee of Clary's jeans. She picked at it, scraping the skin underneath.
"The way he talks?
He believes in Sebastian. Believes in what he's doing, whatever that is. I reminded him that Sebastian killed Max, and he didn't even seem to care." Her voice cracked. "He said Sebastian was just as much his brother as Max was." Alec whitened, the red spots on his cheeks standing out like bloodstains.
"Did he say anything about me? Or is he? Did he ask about us?"
Clary shook her head, hardly able to stand the look on Alec's face. Out of the corner of her eye, she could see Magnus watching Alec too, his face almost blank with sadness. She wondered if he was jealous of Jace still, or just hurt on Alec's behalf.
"Why did he come to your house?"
Alec shook his head.
"I don't get it."
"He wanted me to come with him. To join him and Sebastian. I guess he wants their evil little duo to be an evil little trio. She shrugged. Maybe he's lonely. Sebastian can't be the greatest company.
We don't know that.
He could be absolutely fantastic at Scrabble, said Magnus.
He's a murdering psychopath, said Alec flatly.
And Jace knows it.
But Jace isn't Jace right now, Magnus began, and broke off as the phone rang.
I'll get that. Who knows who else might be on the run from the Clave and need a place to stay? It's not like there are hotels in this city.
He padded off toward the kitchen. Alec flung himself down on the sofa.
He's working too hard, he said, looking worriedly after his boyfriend. He's been up all night, every night, trying to decipher those runes.
Is the Clave employing him? Jocelyn wanted to know.
No, Alec said slowly. He's doing it for me, because of what Jace means to me.
He raised his sleeve, showing Jocelyn the Parabatai ruin on his inner forearm.
You knew Jace wasn't dead, Clary said, her mind beginning to tick over thoughts. Because you're Parabatai. Because of that tie between you. But you said you felt something wrong.
Because he's possessed, Jocelyn said.
It's changed him.
Valentine said that when Luke became a downworlder, he felt it.
That sense of wrongness.
Alec shook his head.
But when Jace was possessed by Lilith, I didn't feel it, he said. Now I can feel something wrong. Something off.
He looked down at his shoes. You can feel it when your Parabatai dies.
Like there was a cord tying you to something, and it has snapped, and now you're falling.
He looked at Clary.
I felt it, once in Idris, during the battle. But it was so brief, and when I returned to Alicante, Jace was alive. I convinced myself I had imagined it.
Clary shook her head, thinking of Jace and the blood-soaked sand by Lake Lynn.
You didn't. What I feel now is different, he went on. I feel like he's absent from the world, but not dead. Not imprisoned, just not here.
That's just it, Clary said. Both times I've seen him and Sebastian, they've vanished into thin air. No portal. Just 1 minute they're here, and the next they were gone.
When you talk about there or here, said Magnus, coming back into the room with a yawn,
in this world and that world, what you're talking about are dimensions. There are only a few warlocks who can do dimensional magic. My old friend Ragnar could. Dimensions don't lie side by side. They're folded together, like paper. Where they intersect, dimensional pockets can be created that prevent magic from being able to find you. After all, you're not here, you're there.
Maybe that's why we can't track him? Why Alec can't feel him? Said Clary.
Could be. Magnus sounded almost impressed.
It would mean there's literally no way to find them if they don't want to be found. And no way to get a message back to us if you did find them.
That's complicated, expensive magic.
Sebastian must have some connections.
The door buzzer sounded, and they all jumped. Magnus rolled his eyes.
Everyone calm down, he said,
and vanished into the entryway. He was back a moment later with a man wrapped in a long parchment-colored robe, the back and sides inked with patterns of runes in dark red-brown. Though his hood was up, shadowing his face, he looked completely dry, as if not a flake of snow had fallen on him. When he pushed the hood back, Clary was not at all surprised to see the face of Brother Zachariah. Jocelyn set her mug down suddenly on the coffee table. She was looking at the silent brother. With his hood pushed back, you could see his dark hair, but his face was shadowed so that Clary could not see his eyes, only his high, rune-scarred cheekbones.
You, Jocelyn said, her voice trailing off. But Magnus told me that you would never...
Unexpected events call for unexpected measures.
Brother Zachariah's voice floated out, touching the inside of Clary's head. She knew from the expressions on the faces of the others that they could hear him too.
I will say nothing to the Clave or Council of anything that transpires tonight. If the chance comes before me to save the last of the Herondale bloodline, I consider that of higher importance than the fealty I render the Clave.
So that's settled, Magnus said. He made a strange pair with the silent brother beside him, one of them pale and blanched in robes,
the other in bright yellow pajamas. Any new insight into Lilith's runes?
I have studied the runes carefully and listened to all the testimony given in the council, said Brother Zachariah. I believe that her ritual was twofold. First, she used the Daylighter's bite to revive Jonathan Morgenstern's consciousness. His body was still weak, but his mind and will were alive. I believe that when Jace Herondale was left alone on the roof with him, Jonathan drew on the power of Lilith's runes and forced Jace to enter the enspelled circle that surrounded him. At that point, Jace's will would have been subject to his. I believe he would have drawn on Jace's blood for the strength to rise and escape the roof, taking Jace with him.
And somehow, all that created a connection between them? Clary said. Because when my mother stabbed Sebastian, Jace started to bleed.
Yes. What Lilith did was a sort of twining ritual, not unlike our own Parabatai ceremony, but much more powerful and dangerous. The two were now bound inextricably. Should one die, the other will follow. No weapon in this world can wound only one of them.
When you say they're bound inextricably, Alex said, leaning forward, does that mean, Jace hates Sebastian. Sebastian murdered our brother. And I don't see how Sebastian can be all that fond of Jace either. He was horribly jealous of him all his life. He thought Jace was Valentine's favorite, added Clary. Not to mention, Magnus noted, that Jace killed him. That would put anyone off.
It's like Jace doesn't remember that any of these things happened, Clary said in frustration.
No, not like he doesn't remember them. Like he doesn't believe them.
He remembers them. But the power of the binding is such that Jace's thoughts will pass over and around those facts, like water passing around rocks in a riverbed. It was like the spell that Magnus cast upon your mind, Clarissa. When you saw pieces of the invisible world, your mind would reject them, turn away from them. There is no point reasoning with Jace about Jonathan. The truth cannot break their connection.
Clary thought of what had happened when she had reminded Jace that Sebastian had killed Max. How his face had temporarily furrowed in thought, then smoothed out, as if he had forgotten what she had said as quickly as she'd said it.
Take some small comfort in the fact that Jonathan Morgenstern is as bound as your Jace is. He cannot harm or hurt Jace, nor would he want to, Zachariah added.
Alec threw his hands up. So they love each other now? They're best friends? The hurt and jealousy was plain in his tone.
No, they are each other now. They see as the other sees. They know the other is somehow indispensable to them. Sebastian is the leader, the primary of the two. What he believes, Jace will believe. What he wants, Jace will do.
So he's possessed, Alex said flatly.
In a possession, there is often some part of the person's original consciousness left intact. Those who have been possessed speak of watching their own actions from the outside, crying out, but unable to be heard. But Jace is fully inhabiting his body and mind. He believes himself sane. He believes that this is what he wants.
So, what did he want from me? Clary demanded in a shaking voice. Why did he come to my room tonight? She hoped her cheeks didn't burn. She tried to push back the memory of kissing him, the pressure of his body against hers in the bed.
He still loves you, said Brother Zachariah, and his voice was surprisingly gentle. You are the central point about which his world spins. That has not changed.
And that's why we had to leave, Jocelyn said tensely. He'll come back for her. We couldn't stay at the police station. I don't know where we'll be safe. Here, Magnus said. I can put up wards that will keep Jace and Sebastian out. Clary saw relief flood her mother's eyes. Thank you, Jocelyn said. Magnus waved an arm. It's a privilege. I do love fending off angry shadow hunters, especially of the possessed variety. He is not possessed, Brother Zachariah reminded them. Semantics, said Magnus. The question is, what are the two of them up to? What are they planning? Clary said that when she saw them in the library, Sebastian told Jace he'd be running the Institute soon enough, said Alec. So they're up to something. Carrying on Valentine's work, probably, said Magnus. Down with downworlders, kill all recalcitrant shadow hunters, blah, blah. Maybe. Clary wasn't sure. Jace said something about Sebastian serving a greater cause. The angel only knows what that indicates, Jocelyn said. I was married to a zealot for years. I know what a greater cause means. It means torturing the innocent, brutal murder, turning your back on your former friends, all in the name of something that you believe is bigger than yourself, but is no more than greed and childishness dressed up in fanciful language. Mom, Clary protested, worried to hear Jocelyn sound so bitter. But Jocelyn was looking at Brother Zachariah. You said no weapon in this world can wound only one of them, she said. No weapon you know of. Magnus's eyes glowed suddenly, like a cat's when caught in a beam of light. You think... The Iron Sisters, said Jocelyn. They are the experts on weapons and weaponry. They might, perhaps, have an answer. The Iron Sisters, Clary knew, were the sister sect to the Silent Brothers. Unlike their brethren, they did not have their mouths or eyes sewed shut, but instead lived in almost total solitude, in a fortress whose location was unknown. They were not fighters. They were creators. The hands who shaped the weapons, the steelies, the seraph blades, that kept the shadow hunters alive. There were runes only they could carve, and only they knew the secrets of molding the silvery white substance called Adamas into demon towers, steelies, and witchlight runestones. Rarely seen, they did not attend council meetings or venture into Alicante. It is possible, Brother Zachariah said after a long pause. If Sebastian could be killed, if there is a weapon that could kill him but leave Jace alive, does that mean Jace would be free of his influence? Clary asked. There was an even longer pause. Then, yes, said Brother Zachariah. That would be the most likely outcome. Then we should go to the sisters. Exhaustion hung on Clary like a cloak, weighting her eyes, souring the taste in her mouth. She rubbed her eyes, trying to scrub it away. Now. I can't go, said Magnus. Only female shadow hunters can enter the Adamant Citadel. And you're not going, Jocelyn said to Clary in her sternest, no, you are not going out clubbing with Simon after midnight voice. You're safer here, where you're warded. Isabel, said Alec. Isabel can go. Do you have any idea where she is? Clary said. Home, I'd imagine, said Alec, one shoulder lifting in a shrug. I can call her. I'll take care of it, Magnus said, smoothly removing his cell phone from his pocket and punching in a text with the skill of the long practiced. It's late, and we don't need to wake her up. Everyone needs rest. If I'm to send any of you through to the Iron Sisters, it will be tomorrow. I'll go with Isabel, Jocelyn said. No one's looking for me specifically, and it's better that she not go alone. Even if I'm not technically a shadow hunter, I was once. It's only required that one of us be in good standing. This isn't fair, Clary said. Her mother didn't even look at her.
Clary... Clary rose to her feet. I've been practically a prisoner for the past 2 weeks, she said in a shaking voice. The Clave wouldn't let me look for Jace, and now that he came to me, you won't even let me come with you to the Iron Sisters. It isn't safe. Jace is probably tracking you. Clary lost it. Every time you try to keep me safe, you wreck my life. No, the more involved you get with Jace, the more you wreck your life. Her mother snapped back. Every risk you've taken, every danger you've been in, it's because of him. He held a knife to your throat, Clarissa. That wasn't him, Clary said in the softest, deadliest voice she could imagine. Do you think I'd stay for 1 second with a boy who threatened me with a knife, even if I loved him? Maybe you've been living too long in the mundane world, Mom, but there is magic. The person who hurt me wasn't Jace. It was a demon wearing his face. And the person we're looking for now isn't Jace. But if he dies... There's no chance of getting Jace back, said Alec. There may already be no chance, said Jocelyn. God, Clary, look at the evidence. You thought you and Jace were brother and sister. You sacrificed everything to save his life, and a greater demon used him to get to you. When are you going to face the fact that the two of you are not meant to be together? Clary jerked back as if her mother had hit her. Brother Zacharias stood as still as a statue, as if no one were shouting at all. Magnus and Alec were staring. Jocelyn was red-cheeked, her eyes glittering with anger. Not trusting herself to speak, Clary spun on her heel, stalked down the hallway to Magnus's spare bedroom, and slammed the door behind her. All right, I'm here, Simon said. A cold wind was blowing across the flat expanse of the roof garden, and he stuffed his hands into the pockets of his jeans. He didn't really feel the cold, but he felt like he ought to. He raised his voice. I showed up. Where are you? The roof garden of the Greenwich Hotel, now closed and therefore empty of people, was done up like an English garden, with carefully shaped dwarf box trees, elegantly scattered wicker and glass furniture, and lilac umbrellas that flapped in the stiff wind. The trellises of climbing roses, bare in the cold, spider-webbed the stone walls that surrounded the roof, above which Simon could see a gleaming view of downtown New York. I am here, said a voice, and a slender shadow detached itself from a wicker armchair and rose. I had begun to wonder if you were coming, Daylighter.
Raphael,
said Simon in a resigned voice. He walked forward, across the hardwood planks that wound between the flower borders and artificial pools lined with shining quartz. I was wondering myself. As he came closer, he could see Raphael clearly. Simon had excellent night vision, and only Raphael's skill at blending with the shadows had kept him hidden before. The other vampire was wearing a black suit, turned up at the cuffs to show the gleam of cufflinks in the shape of chains. He still had the face of a little boy angel, though his gaze, as he regarded Simon, was cold. When the head of the Manhattan vampire clan calls you, Louis, you come. And what would you do if I didn't? Stake me? Simon spread his arms wide. Take a shot. Do whatever you want to me. Go nuts.
Dios, but you are boring, said Raphael.
Behind him, by the wall, Simon could see the chrome gleam of the vampire motorcycle he'd ridden to get here. Simon lowered his arms. You're the one who asked me to meet you. I have a job offer for you, said Raphael.
Seriously? You short-staffed at the hotel?
I need the bodyguard.
Simon eyed him.
Have you been watching The Bodyguard?
Because I am not going to fall in love with you and carry you around in my burly arms. Raphael looked at him sourly. I would pay you extra money to remain entirely silent while you worked. Simon stared at him, You're serious, aren't you? I would not bother coming to see you if I were not serious. If I were in a joking mood, I would spend that time with someone I liked. Raphael sat back down in the armchair. Camille Belcour is free in the city of New York. The Shadowhunters are entirely caught up with this stupid business with Valentine's son, and will not be bothered to track her down. She represents an immediate danger to me, for she wishes to reassert her control over the Manhattan clan. Most are loyal to me. Killing me would be the fastest way for her to put herself back at the top of the hierarchy.
Okay, Simon said slowly. But why me?
You are a daylighter. Others can protect me during the night, but you can protect me in the day, when most of our kind are helpless. And you carry the mark of Cain. With you between me and her, she would not dare to strike me.
That's all true, but I'm not doing it.
Raphael looked incredulous.
Why not?
The words exploded out of Simon.
Are you kidding?
Because you've never done one single thing for me in the entire time since I became a vampire. Instead, you have done your level best to make my life miserable and then end it. So, if you want it in vampire language, it affords me great pleasure, my liege, to say to you now, hell no.
It is not wise for you to make an enemy of me, Daylighter. As friends...
Simon laughed incredulously. Wait a second. Were we friends? That was friends? Raphael's fanged teeth snapped out.
He was very angry indeed, Simon realized.
I know why you refuse me, Daylighter. And it is not out of some pretended sense of rejection. You are so involved with the Shadowhunters. You think you are one of them. We have seen you with them. Instead of spending your nights in the hunt, as you should, you spend them with Valentine's daughter. You live with a werewolf. You are a disgrace.
Do you act like this with every job interview?
Raphael bared his teeth.
You must decide if you are a vampire or a Shadowhunter, Daylighter.
I'll take Shadowhunter, then. Because from what I've experienced of vampires, you mostly suck.
No pun intended.
Raphael stood up.
You are making a grave mistake.
I already told you. The other vampire waved a hand, cutting him off.
There is a great darkness coming. It will sweep the earth with fire and shadow. And when it is gone, there will be no more of your precious shadow hunters. We, the Night Children, will survive it. For we live in darkness. But if you persist in denying what you are, you too will be destroyed, and none shall lift a hand to help you.
Without thinking, Simon raised his hand to touch the mark on his forehead. Raphael laughed soundlessly.
Ah, yes, the angel's brand upon you. In the time of darkness, even the angels will be destroyed. Their strength will not aid you, and you had better pray, Daylighter, that you do not lose that mark before the war comes. For if you do, there will be a line of enemies waiting their turn to kill you, and I will be at the head of it.
Clary had been lying on her back on Magnus's sofa bed for a long time. She had heard her mother come down the hall and go into one of the other spare bedrooms, shutting the door behind her. Through her own door, she could hear Magnus and Alec talking in low voices in the living room. She supposed she could wait for them to go to sleep, but Alec had said Magnus had been up until all hours lately studying the runes. Even though Brother Zechariah appeared to have interpreted them, she couldn't trust that Alec and Magnus would retire soon. She sat up on the bed next to Chairman Meow, who made a fuzzy noise of protest, and rummaged in her backpack. She drew out of it a clear plastic box and flipped it open. There were her Prismacolor pencils, some stumps of chalk, and her Steely. She stood up, slipping the Steely into her jacket pocket. Taking her phone off the desk, she texted, Meet me at Taki's. She watched as the message went through, then tucked the phone into her jeans and took a deep breath. This wasn't fair to Magnus, she knew. He'd promised her mother he'd look after her, and that didn't include her sneaking out of his apartment. But she had kept her mouth shut. She hadn't promised anything. And besides, it was Jace.
You would do anything to save him. Whatever it cost you, whatever you might owe to hell or heaven, would you not?
She took out her steely, set the tip to the orange paint of the wall, and began to draw a portal. A sharp banging noise woke Jordan out of a sound sleep. He bolted upright instantly and rolled out of bed to land in a crouch on the floor. Years of training with the preacher had left him with fast reflexes and a permanent habit of sleeping lightly. A quick sight-sense scan told him the room was empty, just moonlight pooling on the floor at his feet. The banging came again, and this time he recognized it. It was the sound of someone pounding on the front door. He usually slept in just his boxer shorts. Yanking on jeans and a t-shirt, he kicked the door of his room open and strode out into the hallway. If this was a bunch of drunk college kids amusing themselves by knocking on all the doors in the building, they were about to get a faceful of angry werewolf. He reached the door and paused. The image came to him again, as it had in the hours it had taken him to fall asleep, of Maya running away from him at the Navy Yard. The look on her face when she pulled away from him. He'd pushed her too far, he knew. Asked for too much, too fast. Blown it completely, probably. Unless, maybe she'd reconsidered. There had been a time when the relationship had been all passionate fights and equally passionate makeup sessions. His heart pounding, he threw the door open and blinked. On the doorstep stood Isabel Lightwood, her long black glossy hair falling almost to her waist. She wore black suede knee-high boots, tight jeans, and a red silky top, with her familiar red pendant around her throat, glittering darkly. Isabel? He couldn't hide the surprise in his voice, or, he suspected, the disappointment. Yeah, well, I wasn't looking for you either, she said, pushing past him into the apartment. She smelled of Shadowhunter, a smell like sun-warmed glass, and underneath that, a rosy perfume. I was looking for Simon. Jordan squinted at her. It's 2 in the morning. She shrugged. He's a vampire. But I'm not. Oh? Her red lips curled up at the corners. Did I wake you up? She reached out and flicked the top button on his jeans, the tip of her fingernail scraping across his flat stomach. He felt his muscles jump. Izzy was gorgeous. There was no denying that. She was also a little terrifying. He wondered how unassuming Simon managed to handle her at all. You might want to button these all the way up. Nice boxers, by the by. She moved past him, toward Simon's bedroom. Jordan followed, buttoning his jeans and muttering about how there was nothing strange about having a pattern of dancing penguins on your underwear. Isabel ducked her head into Simon's room. He's not here. She slammed the door behind her and leaned back against the wall, looking at Jordan. You did say it was 2 in the morning. Yeah, he's probably at Clary's. He's been sleeping there a lot lately. Isabel bit her lip. Right, of course. Jordan was beginning to get that feeling he got sometimes, that he was saying something unfortunate without knowing exactly what that thing was. Is there a reason you came over here? I mean, did something happen? Is something wrong? Wrong? Isabel threw up her hands. You mean other than the fact that my brother has disappeared and has probably been brainwashed by the evil demon who murdered my other brother, and my parents are getting divorced, and Simon is off with Clary? She stopped abruptly and stalked past him into the living room. He hurried after her. By the time he caught up, she was in the kitchen, rifling through the pantry shelves. Do you have anything to drink? A nice Barolo? Sagrantino? Jordan took her by the shoulders and moved her gently out of the kitchen. Sit, he said. I'll get you some tequila.
Tequila?
Tequila is what we have. That and cough syrup. Sitting down at one of the stools that lined the kitchen counter, she waved a hand at him. He would have expected her to have long red or pink fingernails, buffed to perfection, to match the rest of her. But no, she was a shadow hunter. Her hands were scarred, the nails squared off and filed down. The voyance rune shone blackly on her right hand. Fine. Jordan grabbed the bottle of Cuervo, uncapped it, and poured her a shot. He pushed the glass across the counter. She downed it instantly, frowned, and slammed the glass down. Not enough, she said, reached across the counter, and took the bottle out of his hand. She tilted her head back and swallowed once, twice, three times. When she set the bottle back down, her cheeks were flushed.
Where did you learn to drink like that?
He wasn't sure if he should be impressed or frightened. The drinking age in Idris is 15. Not that anyone pays attention. I've been drinking wine mixed with water along with my parents since I was a kid. Isabel shrugged. The gesture lacked a little of her usual fluid coordination.
Okay. Well, is there a message you want me to give to Simon, or anything I can say, or...
No... She took another swig out of the bottle.
I got all liquored up to come over and talk to him. And of course, he's at Clary's.
Figures. I thought you were the one who told him he ought to go over there in the first place.
Yeah.
Isabel fiddled with the label on the tequila bottle.
I did.
So, Jordan said, in what he thought was a reasonable tone, tell him to stop.
I can't do that. She sounded exhausted.
I owe her. Jordan leaned on the counter. He felt a little like a bartender in a TV show, dispensing sage advice.
What do you owe her?
Life, Isabel said. Jordan blinked. This was a little beyond his bartending and advice-offering skills.
She saved your life?
She saved Jace's life. She could have had anything from the angel Raziel. And she saved my brother. I've only ever trusted a few people in my life, really trusted. My mother, Alec, Jace, and Max. I lost one of them already. Clary's the only reason I didn't lose another.
Do you think you'll ever be able to really trust someone you're not related to?
I'm not related to Jace. Not really.
Isabel avoided his gaze.
You know what I mean, said Jordan, with a meaningful glance at Simon's room. Izzy frowned.
Shadow hunters live by an honor code, werewolf, she said. And for a moment, she was all arrogant Nephilim, and Jordan remembered why so many downworlders disliked them.
Clary saved a Lightwood. I owe her my life. If I can't give her that, and I don't see how she has any use for it, I can give her whatever will make her less unhappy.
You can't give her Simon. Simon's a person, Isabel. He goes where he wants.
Yeah, she said. Well, he doesn't seem to mind going where she is, does he?
Jordan hesitated. There was something about what Isabel was saying that seemed off, but she wasn't completely wrong either. Simon had with Clary an ease that he never seemed to show with anyone else. Having been in love with only one girl in his life, and having stayed in love with her, Jordan didn't feel he was qualified to hand out advice on that front. Though he remembered Simon warning him, with wryness, that Clary had the nuclear bomb of boyfriends. Whether there had been jealousy under that wryness, Jordan wasn't sure. He wasn't sure whether you could ever completely forget the first girl you loved, either. Especially when she was right there in front of you, every day.
Isabel snapped her fingers. Hey, you!
Are you even paying attention?
She tilted her head to the side, blowing dark strands of hair out of her face
and looked at him hard.
What's going on with you and Maya, anyway?
Nothing. The single word held volumes. I'm not sure she's ever going to stop hating me.
She might not at that, Isabel said.
She's got good reason.
Thanks. I don't do false reassurances, Izzy said, and pushed the tequila bottle away from her. Her eyes, on Jordan, were lively and dark.
Come here, werewolf boy.
She dropped her voice. It was soft, seductive. Jordan swallowed against a suddenly dry throat. He remembered seeing Isabel in her red dress outside the ironworks and thinking, that's the girl Simon was messing around on Maya with? Neither of them was the sort of girl who gave the impression you could cheat on her and survive it. And neither one of them was the sort of girl you said no to. Wearily, he moved around the counter toward Isabel. He was a few steps away when she reached out and pulled him toward her by the wrists. Her hand slid up his arms, over the swell of his biceps, the muscles of his shoulders. His heartbeat quickened. He could feel the warmth coming off her, and could smell her perfume and sweet tequila.
You're gorgeous, she said.
Her hands slid around to flatten themselves against his chest.
You know that, right?
Jordan wondered if she could feel his heart beating through his shirt. He knew the way girls looked at him on the street. Boys, too, sometimes. Knew what he saw in the mirror every day, but he never thought about it much. He had been so focused on Maya for so long that it never seemed to matter beyond whether she would still find him attractive if they ever saw each other again. He'd been chatted up plenty, but not often by girls who looked like Isabel, and never by anyone so blunt. He wondered if she was going to kiss him. He hadn't kissed anyone but Maya since he was 15. But Isabel was looking up at him, and her eyes were big and dark, and her lips were slightly parted and the color of strawberries. He wondered if they would taste like strawberries if he kissed her.
"And I just don't care," she said.
"Isabel, I don't think..."
"Wait, what?"
"I should care," she said. "I mean, there's Maya to think about, so I probably wouldn't just rip your clothes off blithely anyway. But the thing is, I don't want to. Normally, I would want to."
"Ah," Jordan said.
He felt relief, and also the tiniest twinge of disappointment.
"Well, that's good."
"I think about him all the time," she said. "It's awful. Nothing like this has ever happened to me before."
"You mean Simon?"
"Scrawny little mundane bastard," she said, and took her hands off Jordan's chest.
"Except he isn't scrawny anymore. Or mundane. And I like spending time with him. He makes me laugh. And I like the way he smiles. You know, one side of his mouth goes up before the other one."
"Well, you live with him. You must have noticed."
"Not really," said Jordan.
"I miss him when he's not around," Isabel confessed. "I thought, I don't know, after what happened that night with Lilith, things changed between us. But now he's with Clary all the time, and I can't even be angry with her."
"You lost your brother."
Isabel looked up at him.
"What?"
"Well, he's knocking himself out to make Clary feel better because she lost Jace," said Jordan. "But Jace is your brother. Shouldn't Simon be knocking himself out to make you feel better, too? Maybe you're not mad at her, but you could be mad at him."
Isabel looked at him for a long moment. "But we're not anything," she said.
"He's not my boyfriend. I just like him," she frowned.
"Crap, I can't believe I said that. I must be drunker than I thought."
"I kind of figured it out from what you were saying before," he smiled at her. She didn't smile back, but she lowered her lashes and looked up at him through them.
"You're not so bad," she said.
"If you want, I can say nice things to Maya about you."
"No, thanks,"
said Jordan, who wasn't sure what Izzy's version of nice things was and feared finding out. You know, it's normal, when you're going through a tough time, to want to be with the person you... He was about to say love, realized she had never used the word, and switched gears. Care about. But I don't think Simon knows you feel that way about him. Her lashes fluttered back up. Does he ever say anything about me? He thinks you're really strong, Jordan said, and that you don't need him at all. I think he feels superfluous in your life. Like, what can he give you when you're already perfect? Why would you want a guy like him? Jordan blinked. He hadn't meant to run on like that, and he wasn't sure how much of what he'd said applied to Simon, and how much to himself and Maya.
So you mean I should tell him how I feel? Said Isabel in a small voice.
Yes, definitely. Tell him how you feel.
Okay.
She grabbed for the tequila bottle and took a swig. I'll go over to Clary's right now, and I'll tell him. A small flower of alarm blossomed in his chest. You can't. It's practically 3 a.m. If I wait, I'll lose my nerve, she said, in that reasonable tone that only very drunk people ever employed. She took another swig out of the bottle. I'll just go over there, and I'll knock on the window, and I'll tell him how I feel. Do you even know which window is Clary's? She squinted. No. The horrible vision of a drunk Isabel waking up Jocelyn and Luke floated through Jordan's head. Isabel? No. He reached up to take the tequila bottle from her, and she jerked it away from him.
I think I'm changing my mind about you, she said in a semi-threatening tone that would have been more frightening if she'd been able to focus her eyes on him directly. I don't think I like you so much after all.
She stood up, looked down at her feet with a surprised expression, and fell over backward. Only Jordan's quick reflexes allowed him to catch her before she hit the floor. Chapter 7 A Sea Change. Clary was on her third cup of coffee at Tacky's when Simon finally walked in. He was in jeans, a red zip-up sweatshirt, why bother with wool coats when you didn't feel the cold, and engineer boots. People turned to look at him as he wove his way through the tables toward her. Simon had cleaned up nicely since Isabel had started getting on his case about his clothes, Clary thought as he headed toward her among the tables. There were flakes of snow caught in his dark hair, but where Alec's cheeks had been scarlet from the cold, Simon's remained colorless and pale. He slid into the booth across from her and looked at her, his dark eyes reflective and shining.
You called? He asked, making his voice deep and resonant so that it sounded like Count Dracula.
Technically, I texted.
She slid the menu across the table toward him, flipping it to the page for vampires. She'd glanced at it before, but the thought of blood pudding and blood milkshakes made her shudder.
I hope I didn't wake you up.
Oh, no, he said. You wouldn't believe where I was. His voice trailed off as he saw the expression on her face. Hey. His fingers were suddenly under her chin, lifting her head. The laughter was gone from his eyes, replaced by concern. What happened? Is there more news about Jace?
Do you know what you want?
It was Kaylee, the blue-eyed fairy waitress who had given Clary the Queen's Bell. She looked at Clary now and grinned, a superior grin that made Clary grit her teeth. Clary ordered a piece of apple pie. Simon ordered a mix of hot chocolate and blood. Kaylee took the menus away, and Simon looked at Clary with concern. She took a deep breath and told him about the night, every gritty detail, Jace's appearance, what he had said to her, the confrontation in the living room, and what had happened to Luke. She told him what Magnus had said about dimensional pockets and other worlds, and how there was no way to track someone hidden in a dimensional pocket or get a message through to them. Simon's eyes grew darker as she spoke, and by the end of the story, he had his head in his hands.
Simon? Kaylee had come and gone, leaving their food, which was untouched. Clary touched his shoulder.
What is it? Is it Luke?
It's my fault. He looked up at her, eyes dry. Vampires cried tears mixed with blood, she thought. She had read that somewhere.
If I hadn't bitten Sebastian. You did it for me, so I'd live.
Her voice was gentle.
You saved my life.
You've saved mine 6 or 7 times. It seemed fair. His voice cracked. She recalled him retching up Sebastian's black blood on his knees in the roof garden.
Assigning blame doesn't get us anywhere, Clary said.
And this isn't why I dragged you here, just to tell you what happened. I mean, I would have told you anyway, but I would have waited for tomorrow if it weren't that. He looked at her warily and took a sip from his mug.
Weren't that what?
I have a plan. He groaned.
I was afraid of that.
My plans are not terrible. Isabel's plans are terrible. He pointed a finger at her. Your plans are suicidal, at best. She sat back, her arms crossed over her chest.
Do you want to hear it or not? You have to keep it a secret.
I would pluck out my own eyes with a fork before I would give away your secrets, Simon said, then looked anxious. Wait a second. Do you think that's likely to be required?
I don't know.
Clary covered her face with her hands.
Just tell me.
He sounded resigned. With a sigh, she reached into her pocket and drew out a small velvet bag, which she upended on the table. 2 golden rings fell out, landing with a soft clink. Simon looked at them, puzzled.
You want to get married?
Don't be an idiot. She leaned forward, dropping her voice.
Simon, these are the rings, the ones the Sealy Queen wanted.
I thought you said you never got them. He broke off, raising his eyes to her face.
I lied. I did take them. But after I saw Jace in the library, I didn't want to give them to the Queen anymore. I had a feeling we might need them sometime, and I realized she was never going to give us any useful information. The rings seemed more valuable than another round with the Queen.
Simon caught them up in his hand, hiding them from sight as Kaylee passed by.
Clary, you can't just take things the Sealy Queen wants and keep them for yourself. She's a very dangerous enemy to have.
She looked at him pleadingly.
Can we at least see if they work?
He sighed and handed her one of the rings. It felt light, but was as soft as real gold. She worried for a moment that it wouldn't fit, but as soon as she slipped it onto her right index finger, it seemed to mold the shape of her finger until it sat perfectly in the place below her knuckle. She saw Simon glancing down at his right hand and realized the same thing had happened to him.
Now we talk, I guess, he said. Say something to me, you know, mentally.
Clary turned to Simon, feeling absurdly as if she were being asked to perform in a play whose lines she hadn't memorized.
Simon.
Simon blinked.
I think, could you do that again?
This time Clary concentrated, trying to focus her mind on Simon. The Simon-ness of him, the shape of the way he thought, the feeling of hearing his voice, the sense of him close, his whispers, his secrets, the way he made her laugh.
So, she thought conversationally, now that I'm in your mind,
want to see some naked mental pictures of Jace? Simon jumped.
I heard that, and no.
Excitement fizzed in Clary's veins.
It was working. Think something back to me.
It took less than a second. She heard Simon, the way she heard Brother Zachariah, a voice without sound inside her mind.
You've seen him naked?
Well, not entirely, but I...
Enough,
he said out loud. And though his voice was caught between amusement and anxiety, his eyes sparked.
They work. Holy crap, they really work.
She leaned forward.
So can I tell you my idea? He touched the ring on his finger, feeling its delicate tracery, the leaf veins carved under his fingertips.
Sure.
She began to explain, but she hadn't yet reached the end of her description when Simon interrupted, out loud this time. No, absolutely not.
Simon, she said, it's a perfectly fine plan.
The plan where you follow Jace and Sebastian off to some unknown dimensional pocket, and we use these rings to communicate so those of us over here in the regular dimension of Earth can track you down? That plan?
Yes.
No, he said. No, it isn't. Clary sat back.
You don't just get to say no.
This plan involves me. I get to say no.
No.
Simon! Simon patted the seat beside him as if someone were sitting there. Let me introduce you to my good friend, No.
Maybe we can compromise, she suggested, taking a bite of pie.
No.
Simon!
No is a magical word, he told her. Here's how it goes. You say, Simon, I have an insane suicidal plan. Would you like to help me carry it out? And I say, why, no.
I'll do it anyway, she said.
He stared at her across the table.
What?
I'll do it whether you help me or not, she said. If I can't use the rings, I'll still follow Jace to wherever he is and try to get word back to you guys by sneaking away, finding telephones, whatever.
If it's possible, I'm going to do it, Simon. I just have a better chance of surviving if you help me. And there's no risk to you.
I don't care about risk to me, he hissed, leaning forward across the table. I care about what happens to you. Damn it, I'm practically indestructible. Let me go. You stay behind.
Yes, Clary said. Jace won't find that odd at all. You can just tell him you've always been secretly in love with him and you can't stand being parted.
I could tell him I've given it thought and I completely agree with his and Sebastian's philosophy and decided to throw in my lot with theirs.
You don't even know what their philosophy is.
There is that. I might have better luck telling him I'm in love with him. Jace thinks everyone's in love with him anyway.
But I, said Clary, actually am.
Simon looked at her for a long time over the table, silently.
You're serious, he said finally. You'd actually do this, without me, without any safety net.
There isn't anything I wouldn't do for Jace.
Simon leaned his head back against the plastic booth seat. The mark of Cain glowed a gentle silver against his skin.
Don't say that, he said. Wouldn't you do anything for the people you love?
I'd do almost anything for you, Simon said quietly. I'd die for you. You know that.
But would I kill someone else? Someone innocent? What about a lot of innocent lives? What about the whole world? Is it really love to tell someone that if it came down to picking between them and every other life on the planet, you'd pick them? Is that, I don't know, is that a moral sort of love at all?
Love isn't moral or immoral, said Clary. It just is.
I know, Simon said. But the actions we take in the name of love, those are moral or immoral. And normally it wouldn't matter. Normally, whatever I think of Jace being annoying, he'd never ask you to do anything that went against your nature. Not for him. Not for anyone. But he isn't exactly Jace anymore, is he? And I just don't know, Clary. I don't know what he might ask you to do.
Clary leaned her elbow on the table, suddenly very tired.
Maybe he isn't Jace, but he's the closest thing to Jace I've got. There's no way back to Jace without him.
She raised her eyes to Simon's.
Or are you telling me it's hopeless?
There was a long silence. Clary could see Simon's innate honesty warring with his desire to protect his best friend. Finally, he said,
I'd never say that. I'm still Jewish, you know, even if I am a vampire. In my heart, I remember and believe. Even the words I can't say, God. He choked and swallowed. He made a covenant with us. Just like the Shadowhunters believe Raziel made a covenant with them. and we believe in his promises. Therefore, you can never lose hope, Hatikva. Because if you keep hope alive, it will keep you alive. He looked faintly embarrassed. My rabbi used to say that. Clary slid her hand across the table and laid it atop Simon's. He rarely talked about his religion with her, or anyone, though she knew he believed.
Does that mean you agree?
He groaned. I think it means you crushed my spirit and beat me down.
Fantastic.
Of course, you realize you're leaving me in the position of being the one to tell everyone. Your mother, Luke, Alec, Izzy, Magnus.
I guess I shouldn't have said there would be no risk to you, Clary said meekly.
That's right, said Simon. Just remember, when your mother's gnawing my ankle like a furious mama bear separated from her cub, I did it for you. Jordan had only just fallen back asleep when the banging on the front door came again. He rolled over and groaned. The clock by the bed said 4 a.m. in blinking yellow numbers. More banging. Jordan rolled reluctantly to his feet, dragged on his jeans, and staggered out into the hallway. Blearily, he jerked the door open.
Look.
The words died on his lips.
Standing in the hallway was Maya. She was wearing jeans and a caramel-colored leather jacket, and her hair was pulled up behind her head with bronze chopsticks. A single loose curl fell against her temple. Jordan's fingers itched to reach out and tuck it behind her ear. Instead, he jammed his hands into the pockets of his jeans.
Nice shirt, she said with a dry glance at his bare chest. There was a backpack slung over one of her shoulders. For a moment, his heart jumped. Was she leaving town? Was she leaving town to get away from him?
Look, Jordan. Who is it?
The voice behind Jordan was husky, as rumpled as the bed she'd probably just climbed out of. He saw Maya's mouth drop open, and he looked back over his shoulder to see Isabel, wearing only one of Simon's t-shirts, standing behind him and rubbing at her eyes. Maya's mouth snapped shut.
It's me, she said, in a not particularly friendly tone.
Are you visiting Simon?
What? No, Simon's not here.
Shut up, Isabel, Jordan thought frantically. She gestured vaguely.
Out.
Maya's cheeks reddened. It smells like a bar in here.
Jordan's cheap tequila, said Isabel with a wave of her hand.
You know.
Is that his shirt, too? Maya inquired.
Isabel glanced down at herself, and then back up at Maya. Belatedly, she seemed to realize what the other girl was thinking.
Oh, no, Maya.
So first Simon cheated on me with you, and now you and Jordan...
Simon, Isabel said, also cheated on me with you.
Anyway, nothing's going on with me and Jordan. I came over to see Simon, but he wasn't here, so I decided to crash in his room. And I'm going back in there now.
No, Maya said sharply. Don't. Forget about Simon and Jordan. What I have to say, it's something you need to hear, too.
Isabel froze, one hand on Simon's door, her sleep-flushed face slowly paling.
Jace, she said. Is that why you're here?
Maya nodded. Isabel sagged against the door.
Is he?
Her voice cracked. She started again.
Have they found?
He came back, said Maya. For Clary. She paused. He had Sebastian with him. There was a fight, and Luke was injured. He's dying. Isabel made a dry little sound in her throat.
Jace? Jace hurt Luke?
Maya avoided her eyes.
I don't know what happened exactly. Only that Jace and Sebastian came for Clary, and there was a fight. Luke was hurt.
Clary is all right. She's at Magnus's with her mother. Maya turned to Jordan. Magnus called me and asked me to come and see you. He tried to reach you, but he couldn't. He wants you to put him in touch with the preacher Lupus.
Put him in touch with?
Jordan shook his head. You can't just call the preacher. It's not like 1-800-WERE-WOLF. Maya crossed her arms. Well, how do you reach them, then?
I have a supervisor. He reaches me when he wants to. Or I can call him in an emergency.
This is an emergency.
Maya hooked her thumbs through the belt loops on her jeans.
Luke could die, and Magnus says the preacher might have information that could help.
She looked at Jordan, her eyes big and dark. He ought to tell her, he thought, that the preacher didn't like getting mixed up in the affairs of the Clave, that they kept to themselves and their mission, to help new downworlders, that there was no guarantee they would agree to help, and every likelihood that they would resent the request. But Maya was asking him. This was something he could do for her that might be a step down the long road of making it up to her for what he'd done before.
Okay, he said. Then we go to their headquarters and present ourselves in person. They're out on the North Fork of Long Island, pretty far from anywhere. We could take my truck.
Fine. I thought we might have to go somewhere. That's why I brought my stuff.
Maya? It was Isabel. She hadn't said anything in so long that Jordan had almost forgotten she was there. He turned and saw her leaning against the wall by Simon's door. She was hugging herself as if she were cold.
Is he all right?
Maya winced.
Luke?
No, he...
Jace!
Isabel's voice was an indrawn breath.
Is Jace all right? Did they hurt him? Or catch him? Or...
He's fine, Maya said flatly. And he's gone. He disappeared with Sebastian.
And Simon?
Isabel's gaze flicked to Jordan.
You said he was with Clary.
Maya shook her head. He wasn't. He wasn't there. Her hand was tight on the strap of her backpack. But there's one thing we know now, and you're not going to like it. Jace and Sebastian are connected somehow. Hurt Jace, you hurt Sebastian. Kill him, and Sebastian dies, and vice versa. Straight from Magnus.
Does the Clave know?
Isabel demanded instantly.
They didn't tell the Clave, did they?
Maya shook her head. Not yet.
They'll find out, said Isabel. The whole pack knows. Someone will tell. Then it'll be a manhunt. They'll kill him just to kill Sebastian. They'll kill him anyway.
She reached up and pushed her hands through her thick black hair.
I want my brother, she said. I want to see Alec.
Well, that's good, Maya said. Because after Magnus called me, he sent a follow-up text. He said he had a feeling you'd be here, and he had a message for you. He wants you to go to his apartment in Brooklyn, right away. It was freezing out. So cold that even the thermos rune she put on herself and the thin parka she'd swiped from Simon's closet weren't doing much to keep Isabel from shivering as she pushed open the door of Magnus's apartment building and ducked inside. After being buzzed up, she headed up the stairs, trailing her hand along the splintering banister. Part of her wanted to rush up the steps, knowing Alec was there and would understand what she was feeling. The other part of her, the part that had hidden her parents' secret from her brothers all her life, wanted to curl up on the landing and be alone with her misery. The part that hated relying on anyone else, because wouldn't they just let you down? And was proud to say that Isabel Lightwood didn't need anyone, reminded herself that she was here because they had asked for her. They needed her. Isabel didn't mind being needed. Liked it, in fact. It was why it had taken her so long to warm up to Jace when he had first stepped through the portal from Idris. A thin 10-year-old boy with haunted pale gold eyes. Alec had been delighted with him immediately. But Isabel had resented his self-possession. When her mother had told her that Jace's father had been murdered in front of him, she'd imagined him coming to her tearfully, for comfort and even advice. But he hadn't seemed to need anyone. Even at 10 years old, he'd had a sharp, defensive wit and an acidic temperament. In fact, Isabel had thought, dismayed, that he was just like her. In the end,
It was shadow hunting that they had bonded over. A shared love of sharp-edged weapons, gleaming serif blades, the painful pleasure of burning marks, the thought-numbing swiftness of battle. When Alec had wanted to go out hunting alone with Jace, leaving Izzy behind, Jace had spoken up for her. "We need her with us. She's the best there is. Aside from me, of course." She had loved him just for that. She was at the front door of Magnus's apartment now. Light poured through the crack under the door, and she heard murmuring voices. She pushed the door open, and a wave of warmth enveloped her. She stepped gratefully forward. The warmth came from a fire leaping in the grated fireplace, though there were no chimneys in the building, and the fire had the blue-green tinge of enchanted flame. Magnus and Alec sat on one of the couches grouped near the fireplace. As she came in, Alec looked up and saw her, and sprang to his feet, hurrying barefoot across the room. He was wearing black sweatpants and a white t-shirt with a torn collar, to put his arms around her. For a moment, she stood still in the circle of his arms, hearing his heartbeat, his hands patting half-awkwardly up and down her back, her hair. "Iz," he said. "It's going to be okay, Izzy." She pushed away from him, wiping at her eyes. God, she hated crying. "How can you say that?" she snapped. "How can anything possibly be okay after this?" "Izzy." Alec drew his sister's hair over one shoulder and tugged gently at it. It reminded her of the years when she used to wear her hair in braids, and Alec would yank on them, with considerably less gentleness than he was showing now. "Don't go to pieces. We need you." He dropped his voice. "Also, do you know you smell like tequila?" She looked over at Magnus, who was watching them from the sofa with his unreadable cat's eyes. "Where's Clary?" she said. "And her mother. I thought they were here." "Asleep," said Alec. "We thought they needed a rest."
"And I don't."
"Did you just see your fiancé or your stepfather nearly murdered in front of your eyes?" Magnus inquired dryly. He was wearing striped pajamas with a black silk dressing gown thrown over them. "Isabel Lightwood," he said, sitting up and loosely clasping his hands in front of him. "As Alec said, we need you." Isabel straightened up, putting her shoulders back. "Need me for what?" "To go to the Iron Sisters," said Alec. "We need a weapon that will divide Jace and Sebastian so that they can be hurt separately. Well, you know what I mean. So Sebastian can be killed without hurting Jace. And it's a matter of time before the Clave knows that Jace isn't Sebastian's prisoner, that he's working with him." "It's not Jace," Isabel protested. "It may not be Jace," said Magnus, "but if he dies, your Jace dies right along with him." "As you know, the Iron Sisters will speak only to women," said Alec, "and Jocelyn can't go alone because she isn't a shadow hunter anymore." "What about Clary?" "She's still in training. She won't know the right questions to ask, or the way to address them. But you and Jocelyn will. And Jocelyn says she's been there before. She can help guide you once we portal you to the edge of the wards around the Adamant Citadel. You'll be going, both of you, in the morning." Isabel considered it. The idea of finally having something to do, something definite and active and important, was a relief. She would prefer a task that had something to do with killing demons or chopping off Sebastian's legs, but this was better than nothing. The legends surrounding the Adamant Citadel made it sound like a forbidding, distant place, and the Iron Sisters were seen far more rarely than the Silent Brothers. Isabel had never met one. "When do we leave?" she said. Alex smiled for the first time since she'd arrived, and reached to ruffle her hair. "That's my Isabel." "Quit it." She ducked out from his reach and saw Magnus grinning at them from the sofa. He levered himself up and ran a hand through his already explosively spiky black hair. "I've got 3 spare rooms," he said. "Clary's in one, her mother's in the other. I'll show you the 3rd. The rooms all branched off a narrow, windowless hallway that led from the living room. Two of the doors were closed. Magnus drew Isabel through the third into a room whose walls were painted hot pink. Black curtains hung from silver bars over the windows, secured by handcuffs. The bedspread had a print of dark red hearts on it. Isabel glanced around. She felt jittery and nervous, and not in the least like going to sleep. Nice handcuffs. I can see why you didn't put Jocelyn in here. I needed something to hold the curtains back. Magnus shrugged. Do you have anything to sleep in? Isabel just nodded, not wanting to admit she'd brought Simon's shirt with her from his apartment. Vampires didn't really smell like anything, but the shirt still carried with it the faint, reassuring scent of his laundry soap. It's kind of weird, she said. You demanding I come over right away, only to put me to bed and tell me we're getting started tomorrow? Magnus leaned against the wall by the door, his arms over his chest, and looked at her through slitted cat eyes. For a moment, he reminded her of church, only less likely to bite. I love your brother, he said. You know that, right? If you want my permission to marry him, go right ahead, said Isabel. Autumn's a nice time for it, too. You could wear an orange tux. He isn't happy, said Magnus, as if she hadn't spoken. Of course he isn't, Isabel snapped. Jace! Jace, said Magnus, and his hands made fists at his sides. Isabel stared at him. She'd always thought that he didn't mind Jace, liked him even, once the question of Alec's affections had been settled. Out loud, she said, I thought you and Jace were friends. It's not that, said Magnus. There are some people the universe seems to have singled out for special destinies, special favors, and special torments. God knows we're all drawn toward what's beautiful and broken. I have been. But some people cannot be fixed. Or if they can be, it's only by love and sacrifice so great that it destroys the giver. Isabel shook her head slowly. You've lost me. Jace is our brother. But for Alec, he's Jace's parabatai, too. I know about parabatai, said Magnus. I've known parabatai so close they were almost the same person. Do you know what happens when one of them dies to the one who's left? Stop it! Isabel clapped her hands over her ears, then lowered them slowly. How dare you, Magnus Bane, she said. How dare you make this worse than it is? Isabel. Magnus's hands loosened. He looked a little wide-eyed, as if his outburst had startled even him. I am sorry. I forget, sometimes, that with all of your self-control and strength, you possess the same vulnerability that Alec does. There is nothing weak about Alec, said Isabel. No, said Magnus. To love as you choose, that takes strength. The thing is, I wanted you here for him. There are things I can't do for him, can't give him. For a moment, Magnus looked oddly vulnerable himself. You have known Jace as long as he has. You can give him understanding I can't. And he loves you. Of course he loves me. I'm his sister. Blood isn't love, said Magnus, and his voice was bitter. Just ask Clary. Clary shot through the portal as if through the barrel of a rifle and flew out the other end. She tumbled toward the ground and struck hard on her feet, sticking the landing at first. The pose lasted only a moment, before, too dizzy from the portal to concentrate, she overbalanced and hit the ground, her backpack cushioning her fall. She sighed. Someday, all the training really would kick in, and got to her feet, brushing dust from the seat of her jeans. She was standing in front of Luke's house. The river sparkled over her shoulder, the city rising behind her like a forest of lights. Luke's house was just as they had left it, hours ago. Locked and dark. Clary, standing on the dirt and stone path that led up to the front steps, swallowed hard. Slowly, she touched the ring on her right hand with the fingers of her left. Simon? The reply came immediately. Yeah? Where are you?
walking toward the subway. Did you portal home?
Luke's.
If Chase comes like I think he will, this is where he'll come to. A silence. Then,
well, I guess you know how to get me if you need me.
I guess I do. Clary took a deep breath.
Simon?
Yeah?
I love you.
A pause.
I love you too.
And that was all. There was no click, as when you hung up a phone. Clary just sensed a severing of their connection, as if a cord had been cut inside her head. She wondered if this was what Alec meant when he talked about the breaking of the parabatai bond. She moved toward Luke's house and slowly mounted the stairs. This was her home. If Jace was going to come back for her, as he had mouthed to her that he would, this is where he would come. She sat down on the top step, pulled her backpack onto her lap, and waited. Simon stood in front of the refrigerator in his apartment and took a last swallow of cold blood as the memory of Clary's silent voice faded out of his mind. He had just gotten home, and the apartment was dark, the hum of the refrigerator loud, and the place smelled oddly of tequila? Maybe Jordan had been drinking. His bedroom door was closed anyway, not that Simon blamed him for being asleep. It was after 4 in the morning. He shoved the bottle back into the fridge and headed for his room. It would be the first night he'd slept at home in a week. He'd grown used to having someone to share a bed with, a body to roll against in the middle of the night. He liked the way Clary fit against him, curled asleep with her head on her hand. And, if he had to admit it to himself, he liked that she couldn't sleep unless he was with her. It made him feel indispensable and needed. Even if the fact that Jocelyn didn't appear to care whether he slept in her daughter's bed or not did underscore that Clary's mother apparently regarded him as about as sexually threatening as a goldfish. Of course, he and Clary had shared beds often, from the time they were 5 until they were about 12. That might have had something to do with it, he mused, pushing his bedroom door open. Most of those nights, they'd spent engaged in torrid activities, like having contests to see who could take the longest to eat a single Reese's peanut butter cup. Or they'd sneaked in a portable DVD player and... He blinked. His room looked the same. Bare walls, stacked plastic shelves with his clothes on them, his guitar hanging on the wall, and a mattress on the floor. But on the bed was a single piece of paper, a white square against the frayed black blanket. The scrawled, looping hand was familiar. Isabel's. He picked it up and read.
Simon, I've been trying to call you, but it seems like your phone is turned off. I don't know where you are right now. I don't know if Clary's already told you what happened tonight. But I have to go to Magnus's, and I'd really like you to be there. I'm never scared, but I'm scared for Jace. I'm scared for my brother. I never ask you for anything, Simon, but I'm asking you now. Please come. Isabel.
Simon let the letter fall from his hand. He was out of the apartment and on his way down the steps before it had even hit the floor. When Simon came into Magnus's apartment, it was quiet. There was a fire flickering in the grate, and Magnus sat in front of it on an overstuffed sofa, his feet up on the coffee table. Alec was asleep, his head in Magnus's lap, and Magnus was twirling strands of Alec's black hair between his fingers. The warlock's gaze on the flames was remote and distant, as if he were looking back into the past. Simon couldn't help but remember what Magnus had said to him once about living forever. Someday, you and I will be the only two left. Simon shuddered, and Magnus looked up.
Isabel called you over, I know, he said, speaking in a low voice so as not to wake Alec. She's down the hall, that way. The first bedroom on the left.
Simon nodded, and with a salute in Magnus's direction, headed off down the hall. He felt unusually nervous, as if he were prepping for a first date. Isabel, to his recollection, had never demanded his help or his presence before, had never acknowledged that she needed him in any way. He pushed open the door to the first bedroom on the left and stepped inside. It was dark, the lights off. If Simon hadn't had vampire sight, he probably would have seen only blackness. As it was, he saw the outlines of a wardrobe, chairs with clothes thrown over them, and a bed, covers thrown back. Isabel was asleep on her side, her black hair fanning out across the pillow. Simon stared. He'd never seen Isabel sleeping before. She looked younger than she usually did. Her face relaxed, her long eyelashes brushing the tops of her cheekbones. Her mouth was slightly open, her feet curled up under her. She was wearing only a t-shirt, his t-shirt, a worn blue tee that said, "The Loch Ness Monster Adventure Club, Finding Answers, Ignoring Facts," across the front. Simon closed the door behind him, feeling more disappointed than he had expected. It hadn't occurred to him that she'd already be asleep. He'd been wanting to talk to her, to hear her voice. He kicked his shoes off and lay down beside her. She certainly took up more real estate on the bed than Clary did. Isabel was tall, almost his height, although when he put his hand on her shoulder, her bones felt delicate under his touch. He ran his hand down her arm. "Is," he said. "Isabel?" She murmured and turned her face into the pillow. He leaned closer. She smelled like alcohol and rose perfume. Well, that answered that. He had been thinking about pulling her into his arms and kissing her gently, but Simon Lewis, molester of passed-out women, wasn't really the epitaph by which he wanted to be remembered. He lay down flat on his back and stared at the ceiling, cracked plaster, marked by water stains. Magnus really ought to get someone in here to do something about that. As if sensing his presence, Isabel rolled sideways against him, her soft cheek against his shoulder. "Simon," she said groggily. "Yeah?" He touched her face lightly. "You came." She stretched her arm across his chest, moving so that her head fit against his shoulder. "I didn't think you would." His fingers traced patterns on her arm. "Of course I came." Her next words were muffled against his neck. "Sorry I'm asleep." He smiled to himself, a little, in the dark. "It's okay. Even if all you wanted was for me to come here and hold you while you sleep, I would have done it." He felt her stiffen and then relax. "Simon? Yeah? Can you tell me a story?" He blinked. "What kind of story?" "Something where the good guys win and the bad guys lose and stay dead." "So, like a fairy tale," he said. He racked his brain. He knew only the Disney versions of fairy tales, and the first image that came to his mind was Ariel in her seashell bra. He'd had a crush on her when he was 8. Not that this seemed like the time to mention it. "No." The word was an exhaled breath. "We study fairy tales in school. A lot of that magic is real. But anyway, no. I want something I haven't heard yet." "Okay. I've got a good one." Simon stroked Isabel's hair, feeling her lashes flutter against his neck as she closed her eyes. "A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away." Clary didn't know how long she'd been sitting on Luke's front steps when the sun began to come up. It rose behind his house, the sky turning a dark pinkish rose, the river a strip of steely blue. She was shivering, had been shivering so long that her whole body seemed to have contracted into a single hard shudder of cold. She had used 2 warming runes, but they hadn't helped. She had a feeling the shivering was psychological as much as anything else. Would he come? If he was still as much Jace inside as she thought he was, he would. When he had mouthed that he would come back for her, she had known that he had meant as soon as possible. Jace was not patient, and he didn't play games. but there was only so long she could wait. Eventually the sun would rise, the next day would begin, and her mother would be watching her again. She would have to give up on Jace, for at least another day, if not longer. She shut her eyes against the brightness of the sunrise, resting her elbows on the step above and behind her. For just a moment, she let herself float in the fantasy that everything was as it had been, that nothing had changed, that she would meet Jace this afternoon for practice, or tonight for dinner, and he would hold her and make her laugh the way he always did. Warm tendrils of sunlight touched her face. Reluctantly, her eyes fluttered open. And he was there, walking toward her up the steps, as soundless as a cat, as always. He wore a dark blue sweater that made his hair look like sunlight. She sat up straight, her heart pounding. The brilliant sunshine seemed to outline him in light. She thought of that night in Idris, how the fireworks had streaked across the sky, and she had thought of angels falling in fire. He reached her and held his hands out. She took them and let him pull her to her feet. His pale gold eyes searched her face. "I wasn't sure you'd be here."
"Since when have you not been sure of me?"
"You were pretty angry before." He cupped the side of her face in his hand. There was a rough scar across the palm. She could feel it against her skin. "So if I hadn't been here, what would you have done?" He drew her close. He was shivering, too, and the wind was blowing his curling hair messy and bright. "How was Luke?" At the sound of Luke's name, another shudder went through her. Jace, thinking she was cold, pulled her more tightly against him. "He'll be all right," she said guardedly.
"It's your fault, your fault, your fault."
"I never meant for him to get hurt." Jace's arms were around her, his fingers tracing a slow line up and down her spine. "Do you believe me?"
"Jace," Clary said, "why are you here?"
"To ask you again, to come with me." She closed her eyes. "And you won't tell me where that is?"
"Faith," he said softly. "You have to have faith. But you also have to know, once you come with me, there's no going back. Not for a long time."
She thought of the moment when she'd stepped outside of Java Jones and seen him waiting for her there. Her life had changed in that moment in a way that could never be undone.
"There never has been any going back," she said.
"Not with you."
She opened her eyes.
"We should go." He smiled,
as brilliant as the sun coming out from behind the clouds, and she felt his body relax.
"You're sure?"
"I'm sure."
He leaned forward and kissed her. Reaching up to hold him, she tasted something bitter on his lips. Then darkness came down like a curtain signaling the end of the act of a play.